Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
There you are, radar.
Oh. Hey, mail call.
Hello, and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates, episode by episode, the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I am your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly, and this is our yearly, sometimes, mail call episode, where we wrap up this season of the show, where we go into the comments we got on the website, finewaterpodcast.com. We talk about next season. I do my episode rankings. You know the drill. So let's get right to it. So first up was episode 170, Too Many Cooks, with my guest, Corey Drew. We got comments from Lisa P., Mike Thomas, Marie Christina, Chris Lewis, Brett Young, Tim Price, Stan Peel, Gene Popa, Thomas Burke, Major Joe Price, and Beej Moments, who says, yay, MASHcast. Great start to a great season. I like the unreality of Klinger's mess tent restaurant. It's nice to imagine everyone needing that sort of fantasy experience, given how long they've lived in awful conditions, and their collective belief makes it true, like Tinkerbell. So glad the show's back. Can't wait to hear more. Thank you, Beej. Dr. Ange says, hooray for the return of MASHcast and Corey as well. Yeah, thank you for mentioning that, Ange. It was nice to have Corey back on the show. As you say, this is an interesting episode to start the season on with all the silliness. Truly outside of the Potter plot, this could be straight out of the Trapper years. Perhaps the addition of the heavier Potter plot is supposed to even out the nonsense. I do love when Charles says, quote, the meat, a mystery. Pure comedy gold. But it is interesting that he has such a love of Span Parmigiana, perhaps because he has a love of all things Italian? Question mark. Foreshadowing. I think hospital meals have improved tremendously over the years for patients and with the advent of food courts either in or near the hospital. But there aren't too many free meals for the staff. When things are busy on shift, I can't break away. Dinner is usually saltines with peanut butter and a diet ginger ale. That's grim, man. It is probably my most often eaten meal. So if suddenly someone was making anything of taste and substance in the hospital for the doctors, I also would bend over backwards to keep them around. That's great, Angie. I like this episode's more true to life than we would have imagined. The comments we got for episode 171, Are You Now, Margaret, with Amanda Reyes. We got comments from Jack Coletta, Nicole, a.k.a. Caddy, Captain Entropy, Randall, Rob McCarthy, George, Ange, Gene Popa, Stan Peel, Mike Thomas, who says, it's kind of scary that this episode is more resonant today than when it was made in 1979. It shows how MASH grappled with timeless themes, including the unchanging dark side of human nature. This episode is kind of reminiscent of the earlier seasons when some sort of comedic caper would be used to wrap up the episode. As you and Amanda discussed, I'm not sure there was another way they could have ended the episode, since they really couldn't have our characters save the world from the McCarthy hearings. It's kind of amazing that a corporal like Radar gets an R&R that lasts three episodes. I guess the first few episodes of the seasons are meant to occur within a short period. But given everything that happens in all those episodes put together, it's hard to believe Radar was R&R for only a week or so. Yeah, Mike, it's always strange that the doctors get like a week and Radar seems to get like 2 months. Marie Christina says, Are You Now, Margaret, is one of my favorite episodes, and this was a lovely conversation about it. As a non-American, I know almost nothing about this communist hunt, but I find it fascinating. You can look into what's going on now, Marie. Just read the news. So I go into this episode from an angle more of character development and acting, and oh, it's a great one. The whole episode reminds me of the plot of the opera Tosca, where the main character has a boyfriend in jail, and the chief of police tells her that if you sleep with me, I can absolutely for sure help your boyfriend out, with no intention of helping anyone but himself. It also reminds me of Hot Lips Is Back in Town, where the general tells Margaret, oh yeah, I'll help you work on your project if you sleep with me. Gross dudes. I cannot praise Loretta Swit enough for her performance here. She just kills it in every scene. From being all starstruck and dorky, my goodness, girl, calm down. Just look at how tense she is. How she holds her head, just so keen on presenting herself in the best possible way to this important man. Then being shocked and upset. I just love her whole journey in the scene in Potter's tent. She stands tall at first, her voice loud and certain, then her voice and the look in her eyes shift when asked about her old friends, and then when the committee is mentioned, you can just see the weight that suddenly hits her shoulders and she can't even stand up anymore. Then her tear-filled eyes in the scene in the mess tent. She is so beaten down. Margaret is usually so high energy, always going somewhere physically or mentally, but here she has just stopped and let the misery slip in. The fact that she does remember all the names is so beautiful, and the length she'll go to protect her old friends and her father is heartbreaking. Love that it's not like love that it's not like she's not in control of her body anymore either. And she gets up to leave. Her foot hits the bench she was sitting on. And it's such a tiny detail that says everything about the emotional turmoil she's in. Margaret craves control, but her body is just betraying her. Then her whole fake seductive act in the tent. It's so precise and subtle. And then her joy when the creep leaves. Beautiful, beautiful performance. I truly enjoy that the men had band together to save her, and the whole setup that they come up does seem very believable, just the kind of plan I would expect these men to put together. But it does make me a bit sad, too, when you consider Margaret's history. In MASH time, it wasn't that long ago that bananas, crackers, and nuts happened when that guy just grabbed her in her tent and tried to force himself on her. So this whole situation, even though she knew she was completely safe this time, must bring up some unpleasant memories. And just having to kiss someone against your will is pretty bad. Margaret's sexuality has been used as a joke so many times, and while that doesn't exactly happen here, the scene still ends with joy and laughter. I keep thinking about how she must feel a bit later, and as she had after when she's had some time to reflect. But still, love the rhythm of the whole scene. It's really great and so well performed on everyone's part. Happy you brought up that what would have happened if this was set in an earlier season, because I've been thinking about that too. It's a scenario that I want to write fanfic about one day. Frank would have for sure not have had Margaret's back. I think he would have turned away from her in a heartbeat, horrified. Then Margaret wouldn't have had anyone to talk to. Henry wouldn't have been no help. Hawkeye Trapper, well, I could see a scenario where they set the same thing up, telling the guy about Margaret being a slutty party girl, basically, and sending him to her tent. But I don't think they would have told her about it. He would have showed up, made his offer to save her against certain favors, and she would have felt like it was only her only way out, and then Trapper and Hawkeye would have jumped in, catching them in the act and giving Margaret another trauma. Hawkeye and Trapper were not friends with Margaret, of course, but I do think that they would have seen her as the little guy in all this and taken her side against the greater evil and still not in any way including her in the plan, just focusing on some compromising picks, her well-being never being a concern for them. Not that I have thought a lot about this or anything, just a completely normal amount. And she ends up with also, I want a Nash, not to hang out with Molly Crichton, but my patience with this world is hanging on for a very thin thread. And one day I'm just going to fill my Nash up with wine, books, and food, head out to the woods somewhere and start a new society. Anyone who wants to join, just let me know. I'll text you the coordinates when I'm all set up. Sounds like a great plan, Marie. Please let me know. Episode 172, Gorilla My Dreams, with guest Stephanie Keiss. Got comments from Daniel Hotmans, Mike Thomas, Ange, Marie Christina, Rich DeOrta, Captain Entropy, George, Thomas Burke, Major Joe Price, and Rich Daly, who says, love the podcast. Thank you so much for making it. A couple of things stood out for me that you didn't mention in this episode. You had asked if Charles was in on the plan to sneak the prisoner out. He definitely was in on it. He says to the lieutenant, a game of chess might be a distraction from the folly in which we are all engaged. He emphasizes the word distraction when he looks at Hawkeye and BJ. I didn't notice that, Rich. Thank you for pointing that out. One other thing I don't think you talked about, but I think is very funny, is that when Charles was telling Klinger how he drinks brandy, he says one urges it to insinuate his fumes to the joyous olfactory passages. Later, when Klinger is drinking the brandy with the guards, he tells them to warm it over the fire because it's good for the olfactory. The writing on the show sometimes just blows my mind. Anyway, thanks again for the podcast. I look forward to it when it hits my feed every week, and maybe someday I'll be able to participate. Well, more on that later, Rich. Brett Young from the Fire and Water Network says, great show, Rob and Stephanie. It was interesting to see our heroes read the situation all wrong. Well, you don't want to cheer on someone being sent to their execution. No, there's some people. Anyway, she was clearly trying to kill anyone she could. Mako was amazing in his steadfastness as well as his patience. I feel his character could have really been more aggressive about getting his way, but allowed this to play out of respect to his American allies. I'm sure that was always reciprocated. Finally, regarding Napoleon brandy, it's a good type of brandy. However, it's not always a cognac. The Napoleon name on the label refers to a quality of age, not necessarily made in the French cognac region. It has to be aged in oak barrels a minimum of 6 years, which places it right in between a VSOP, very superior old pale, and an XO, extra old brandy in quality. Thank you, Brett, for bringing all the booze knowledge. Of course, you can check out Brett's show every month here on the network, The Fantastic Four, where he talks about booze and comics. Not necessarily in that order. Episode 172, Goodbye Radar, Part 1, with our guest Lily, got comments on Rob McCarthy, Beej Moments, Mike Thomas, Marie Christina, Ange, Sean, Brett Young, and Chuck Coletta, who says, I'm looking forward to listening to your discussion for this episode for some time. For me, this is the period when MASH begins its slow decline. It was still the best written series on television, but it lingered too long. Berghoff was now in his mid-30s and much too old for this character. The other actors were also rapidly aging beyond any credibility on being on the front lines. Radar's departure and Klinger wearing regulation army fatigue signal a final break from the series' early and more anarchic seasons. I'm a firm believer in the phrase, timing is everything, and like most successful TV programs, MASH should have quit while it was ahead. This is not to say there aren't a number of very fine episodes ahead, but the final seasons are, for me, bittersweet. Other sitcoms that ran on much too long. Cheers, Murphy Brown, Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, Frasier, Three's Company, Golden Girls, Modern Family, and Arrested Development. Okay, Chuck. we'll have this discussion another time about some of these shows that you picked. I would argue Three's Company probably never went downhill because it was bad from the beginning. But again, that's an argument for another day. Tim Price says, so this surprisingly made me laugh. Right after Hawkeye gets his finger cut, he's fussing and hurting, and Margaret says, I'm sorry, Dr. Martyr. Between Loretta's delivery and just that nickname, it just killed me. I don't know what that says about my mood lately, but that was great. Thank you, Tim. Episode 174, Goodbye Radar, Part 2, with guest Lee Riordan, got comments from Daniel Hopmans, Rob McCarthy, Tim Price, Mike Thomas, Ange, Randall, Brett Young, Marie Christina, Nicole, Sean, George, Major Joe Price, and Benjamin Perlman, who says, thank you for your coverage of these episodes. I always enjoy watching these, but I never liked how grumpy Radar was. It was such a departure from his usual attitude. After listening to your podcast, I have a few comments. One. I never thought that Hawkeye's salute was sarcastic. I always felt it was very genuine, and he smiled because he knew Radar would appreciate it. To me, it was very similar to when he and BJ saluted Colonel Potter in the finale. Two, I am very surprised you didn't mention that Major Friedman predicted that Radar would leave his teddy bear behind in the episode War of Nerves. Radar asked, yeah, but what happens when I go home? And Sydney responded, my guess is you probably won't need him anymore. Three, I liked how Klinger got the generator until I saw the DVD. I never knew about the conversation with the clerk. Forgetting how Klinger managed to get the generator on the Jeep by himself, I'm guessing he had to have help. I'm always amazed he managed to get it past Van Kirk so easily. Thank you again for all your episodes, and look forward to your comments on Period of Adjustment and how unfair everyone was to Klinger. Thank you, Benjamin. I did forget about the bit on War Nerves. I should have brought that up. That would have been a nice thing to – that's a nice callback. I don't know if they remembered it. And we're playing off that, or it was just a coincidence. But yeah, it was a nice detail. So thank you for pointing it out. Movie Matsuroi says, it was never strange to me that Radar wanted to stay. Yes, he missed his family and farm, but at the 477th, he had friends and a purpose. Radar arguably had a better life at the 477th. He was the only one who never complained about the food. He ate better in Korea. While he often struggled to express himself around women, he would often get himself a date. Back home, it's him and his mother. Not to mention, farming is extremely difficult work. He had it so much easier running things at the 477th. Everyone else had lives they were trying to get back to. Radar had a life that he was trying to get away from, especially without the reunions he had hoped to have with Henry Blake. That's a great observation, man. I hadn't thought of it. I would argue being somewhere that you're worried about being killed by bombs is still worse than being back on the farm. But yeah, it's not like farm work is an easy gig. And you're right. He obviously was... Radar is very important at the 477th, and that's not so much the case when he's home. So great observation. Thank you. Episode 175, Period of Adjustment, with guests Molly M. and Phoebe. Got comments from Daniel Hopmans, Chris Lewis, Ange, Nicole, Marie Christina, Brett Young, Tim Price, Phoebe M., Molly G., Mike Thomas, Stan Peel, George, Captain Entropy, and Gene Popa, who says, so very much to unfurl in this one. Watching this episode again only reinforces my belief that the one character who came out of Korea with the worst case of PTSD has to have been BJ. And I imagine that during his discussion with Peg, Radar's extolled BJ's virtues to no end, but probably also without really thinking about it, quite likely revealed some of the more harrowing aspects of life at the 477th, things that BJ has been filtering out of his letters home. So Peg now knows that things are a lot grimmer and often more dangerous than her husband lets on, which I hope better prepared her for helping him acclimate to civilian life when he returned home. Terrific observation. Sean says, what an absolutely wonderful episode. The depth of analysis brought by your amazing guests was so compelling. I agree, Sean. I love the BJ dad theory and the metaphor of the still as Hawkeye and BJ's and Trapper before him's baby, symbol of their love for each other, was brilliant. This episode is proof of the brilliance of MASH, that it can be analyzed in new ways across generations. Thank you, Sean. And then Thomas Burke says, hi, Iron Guts. Another great episode. Just a comment. Daily reports were supposed to be filled out every day. That might or might not be picked up every day, but they were collated as often as possible. Thank you, Thomas. I realize that. Again, there's no way they were picked up every day. There's just no way. But I guess, yeah, you have to fill them out every day. Otherwise, you get behind, and then you're off to the races. So. Episode 176, Nurse Doctor, with my guest Remy Fire, got comments from Rob McCarthy, Captain Entropy, Gene Popa, Tim Price, Mike Thomas, Marie Christina, Stan Peel, George, Eric Engler sent a very nice email. I won't read because it was sort of, I think it was private for me, but it was a very nice email. So thank you, Eric. And Captain Entropy says, Rob, I wanted to start by saying that like all of MASH guests, MASH Blur guest hosts of the season, Remy was a ringer. Funny, insightful, and honestly just a joy to listen to. I know there are probably people who don't like hearing about the queer reading of the show. As a straight, cisgender white man, I don't like it when someone says characters that aren't overly LGBTQ must be read that way, a la Dr. Wortham. But I've never heard a MASH Blur guest do that. They generally acknowledge that the writers didn't intend a queer reading. As consumers, they read it that way because A, the plot, dialogue, performances can often support it, and B, they get additional value, representation, depth of meaning, etc., doing so. They have a right to do so, and it would be both wrong and quite pointless for us to try and stop them. The most common case of crossing the line with a queer reading to me is when someone says that these two people of the same gender, especially men, couldn't be that close unless they had a romantic relationship. Well, one of the many benefits the military still provides is platonic friendships between and across genders that really are that close. I've cried with comrades in arms and comforted them as they cried with me. Once, when a group of friends and I were in a chow hall at ISAF headquarters in Kabul, I asked a friend in a difficult situation how he was coping with it. He responded to all of us at the table, "Well, at night, I weep." And we all laughed loudly because it was unexpected, but we also knew that he was telling the truth. You have so much in common, and the emotions can be raw, especially when you're deployed. I've had conversations about bodily functions and marriages and all kinds of things you just wouldn't talk about in an air-conditioned suburbia. But again, have I ever heard a guest in this podcast say Hawkeye and BJ must be gay to be this close? Nope, not once. And in fact, the guest's discussion of the queer reading is usually a tiny fraction of their superb commentary. Is Gail neurodivergent? I'm not qualified to say. Gifted people often pick up emotional intelligence skills later, though this would be very late. Catastrophizing looks like anxiety to me. I'm not qualified to diagnose that either. Honestly, if I had been Hawkeye and she had said Father Mulcahy must have told the whole camp, I'd have been offended on Mulcahy's behalf. Priests have to confide in someone, too. Hawkeye actually handled it better than I would have. I think what they said about the nurse's reactions made perfect sense. If you're a woman in the 50s, you might feel some responsibility to become a nurse, to be a professional and challenge the status quo. Then a woman comes along who's trying to become a doctor. It might make you wonder if you're doing enough, and becoming a nurse, a combat trauma nurse in the Army no less, was already pretty freaking hard. Worse, she's screwing up the carefully curated relationships with the mildly egomaniacal doctors. Okay, Charles's case isn't mild. To me and the medical professionals on this thread that should correct me, nurses and doctors both have to know their patients and the practice of medicine. But the nurses know more about the patients and the doctors know more about the medicine. Sometimes the nurses have to manipulate the doctors to pay attention to the patients and do what's best for them because they, the nurses, actually know better. That is a delicate and sophisticated dance, even more so in 1952, and Gail's demeanor is not helping. As a support officer dealing with the prima donna special operators, I, of course, have never had a similar experience, but I can see the nurses having some resentment. Of course, Gail doesn't see all that and isn't trying to do anything wrong. Is Father Mulcahy gay? I don't think so. If anything, he presents as asexual, the A in LGBTQIA+. Except that there was that time that discussing the nurse's showering made him visibly uncomfortable. Maybe demisexual? Maybe just so used to being totally off the market that he can be clueless when someone is interested in him? I know some podcast hosts like that. I feel so seen, Captain. On that note, regarding to his overreaction to her hug, was that driven by fear of the temptation that Gail presented to him? Maybe I'm projecting why I might feel my might overreact in the same situation. Gail, as we say in the South, is right cute. And that brings up the age difference, since I'm way older than that old lech Hawkeye. Alan Alda turned 43 the year this came out, and the actress playing Gail turned 32. They're both playing younger, maybe 24 and 35, but they're also consenting adults. Of course, there's the power differential to consider and the fact that Hawkeye is often directing the nurse's activity at work. They are both legitimate concerns, but they are concerns with almost every romantic relationship he's had on the show. Anyway, I'm not too concerned about it. In my headcanon, that Quonset hut is where the motor pool does maintenance on the Jeeps, trucks, and ambulances. That's the perfect place to have a private conversation as long as Rizzo isn't around. I agree the location really helped the scene. Anyway, terrific discussion, a great episode as usual. Thank you for MASHcast. Thank you, Captain. It's always a delight to read your comments and look forward to having you on the show again. Episode 177, Private Finance with my guests Sean M. Myers and Dan Greenfield. Get comments from Rob McCarthy, Daniel Hotmans, Mike Thomas, Marie Christina, Major Joe Price, and Stan Peel, who says, way to make me cry while driving. wonderful tribute at the end. As a side note, I'm bummed those commentaries are gone. For some reason, as a kid, this episode scared me a little. That mom definitely seemed angry enough to use that pitchfork. Klinger, you are absolutely in danger. And then Brett Young says, always a great listen. Nice to hear Sean and Dan again. I still think that Dan sounds like Steve Sands from the Golf Channel. I don't know what that means. Every time I hear him, I want his opinion on a downhill bunker shot. Well, this wasn't one of the best episodes. It's still better than most shows. Wonderful send-off to Eddie Robb. You've done good. Thanks, Brett. Episode 178, Mr. and Mrs. Who, with my guest Victoria Marino. Got comments from Ange, Captain Entropy, Victoria Marino, Stan Peel, Marie Christina, James K., Brett Young, Major Joe Price, Gabriel Fortier, Bill from Minnesota, and Nicole, a.k.a. Caddy, who says, I love this episode for both plot lines. Why on earth didn't Donna come back? I can never decide whether I like to take Charles's line, I'm known for my seafaring songs, as genuine or sarcastic. On the one hand, he sings in other episodes, and there are other references to Charles and boats. But on the other hand, he sounds sarcastic. What is your name is one of the greatest line deliveries of the entire show. That's, I completely agree with that, Nicole. Gene Popa says, that button scene is such a delight. I almost have to wonder if they came up with that first and worked backwards to script an episode explaining how they got there. And it would have been nice if at some point in the remaining seasons, we'd have seen Charles writing a letter to Donna Marie just to indicate that they've kept in touch. Agree. I think virtually everybody liked Donna. I don't think I found a single comment or anyone say, why didn't Donna come back? So they mesh kind of missed the chance to do something with that later on. Episode 179, The Yellow Brick Road, with my guest Thomas O'Connor. Got comments from Clinton Robinson, Gabrielle Fortier, Mike Thomas, Chris Lewis, Santoran, Paul Wildenberger, Bill from Minnesota, George, James Cabrahel, Randall, Major Joe Price, Marie Christina, Stan Peel, and Captain Flint, who says, it's funny, Yellow Brick Road doesn't spring immediately to mind when I think of my favorite comfort episodes of MASH, but just hearing this episode synopsis had me grinning like a maniac, and I went and dug out my DVDs to rewatch right after I finished listening to the podcast. It really is one of the bright spots of Season 8, with very little drama, lots of entertaining character dynamics slash banter, and the A-plot and B-plot being equally enjoyable. Regarding whatever Ralph discusses with the other North Korean soldiers to convince them to pass on by, I've always assumed a backstory where those guys are all members of the same platoon. I get the sense that Ralph is inept at his job and the rest of his unit knows it. So when he puts on a big show of pride of having captured two US soldiers, the other North Koreans are charitably amused at him, with the added context of Hawkeye and BJ clearly being unarmed doctors, so it's not that big of an achievement for him to be boasting about like the way he is. Their attitude is, we'll let the kid keep the credit for delivering the prisoners to HQ and get a win for once in his life. And they continue on with their patrol duty. Rob, I appreciate your choice of final line, and the exasperated side-eye Hawkeye gives BJ after he makes the joke is the cherry on top. I would also like to go on the record that Spokes Honeycutt is a nickname BJ made up for himself, and nobody actually calls him that. Although, to be fair to his motorcycle prowess, he's probably not used to riding with two passengers and a full load of luggage in the sidecar. Thanks for another fun episode. Thank you, Captain. I loved all the fanfic you wrote there. That's terrific. And then Gene Popa says, clearly the lesson to be learned here is if you have a crisis, put Mulcahy and Margaret in charge. And I'm assuming the second shift doctors are also stricken and are in the other wing of post-op. What would the Army do in an instance of an entire MASH unit laid up all at once? Shouldn't they round up new doctors, nurses, and support staff and rush them in to take over in case they were wounded? And as for Klinger wearing his pink robe, I wonder if the producers were still a tiny bit unsure whether or not they were going to continue this new direction for him, or if should not really take with viewers, they were willing to put him back in drag, so they were keeping that door ajar for now. Either that or else Klinger thought, I spent a month's pay on this and I'm going to damn well get my money's worth out of it. I think it's probably a little bit of both things. Episode 180, Lifetime, with Doctors Ange and Chris Lewis. Got comments from Chris Lewis and Ange, James K., Gabriel Fortier, Jeff Polier, Marie Christina, Mike Thomas, Movie Matt Sirois, George, Gene Popa, Stan Peel, Brett Young, Captain Wilbugger, Captain Flint, and Bill from Minnesota, who says, Rob always has the great guests on his podcast, but Dr. Ange and Dr. Chris Lewis are my favorites. Always a must listen when they make an appearance. Yes, it is a must listen. Azdak says, what a wonderful episode. It was fascinating to hear the medical perspectives, especially on Margaret's insistence on sterilization and on BJ's soft skills as a doctor, which I admit I had previously underrated. The discussion of the end-to-end anastomosis reminded me of the bit in Alan Alda's memoir, Never Have Her Dog Stuffed, where he gets an intestinal blockage while filming in Chile. The blood supply to some of your small intestine have been choked off and is dying. I have to go in and resect the bad part and then sew the good parts back together. Oh, so you're going to do an end-to-end anastomosis. How do you know that? I did them on MASH. I do have a question for Rob. Most of the time, Rob, you call the characters whatever BJ and Hawkeye call them. So first names, if they're on first name terms, Radar, Frank, Margaret, BJ, Hawkeye, and last names if they aren't, Potter, Klinger, Mulcahy. The only exception is Charles Winchester, who you consistently refer to as Winchester, even though BJ and Hawkeye call him Charles. What's the explanation for this? And it is one that Sidney Freeman would be interested in. I have no explanation for it. I know there's just something about, I guess Winchester just seems more distinctive, and maybe because that's what he's called on the MASH action figure. I don't know. I can't tell. We'll have to get Sydney have to get me on the couch and we'll really unpack that. Phoebe M says, fabulous episode. Loved hearing two doctor perspectives on it. Glad it feels realistic to them in a lot of ways. I recently started working in operating theaters as well, so it was doubly thrilling when I also felt in on the joke. Bear hugger. I know what that is. Love the description of this episode as a symphony. What a perfect way to describe it, with Hawkeye handling the clinical, BJ with the personal, Mulcahy with the spiritual. Awesome stuff. Thank you, Phoebe. Episode 181, Dear Uncle Abdul, my guest Kevin Lauderdale. Got comments from Brian Chufo, Matt B., Rob McCarthy, Gene Popa, Marie Christina, Major Joe Price, and Mike Thomas, who says, this is a very well-constructed episode. Like most of the Dear... episodes, there are seemingly disparate aspects of camp life going on, and here they all come together in the end when Klinger tells Hawkeye and BJ that why they're not the funniest ones at the 477th. I like how Potter, Margaret, and Charles all seem crazy from Klinger's perspective, and I wasn't expecting those separate parts of the episode to be tied up neatly like that at the end. I've heard Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David talk as if they've invented the concept of bringing subplots together at the end of an episode, but MASH has done it at least three times so far in the 8th season by my count, and this is more than 10 years before Seinfeld went on the air. I'm glad you mentioned that the bar is on the other side of the officers' club in this episode. I thought I was going crazy. As far as I remember, it goes back to the other side after this. It kind of reminds me of Happy Days when the Cunningham living room was completely different architecturally when they switched to a three-camera format with the audience. Either the stairway on the front door was on the opposite side of where it was before, which can't really be explained in-universe. At least here, I suppose it's possible they could have moved the bar temporarily to the other side for some reason. Interesting discussion about diegetic comedy. It made me think of Cheers. As Ryan has discussed on Cheers Cast, the characters in the later years occasionally laughed at each other's jokes, so I think that would be diegetic. On Cheers, I think it was the actors themselves who would begin naturally laugh at each other as opposed to it being in the script, but it worked for the vibe of the show in the Rebecca years. Very true. Vanessa says, I love it when people do in-depth analysis of MASH. Well, you've come to the right place, Vanessa. It's such a complex show that can be viewed from so many different lenses like this. Say this episode is basically just showing the rules of comedy and joke structure because you can explain it as such. I feel the same for the Beej analysis done on the Period of Adjustment episode. He's such a little freak of a guy who needs to be dissected like a bug one day, and I'll stop lurking and join the beehive. I'm currently doing a paper for an undergrad class analyzing Bless You Hawkeye, albeit from a more serious perspective, so it makes me happy when others are doing the same. Wow, an academic paper. Episode 182, Captain's Outrageous with Stan Peel. Got comments from Matt B., Phoebe M., Mike Thomas, Randall, Brett Young, Tim Price, Bill from Minnesota, Marie Christina, Major Joe Price, and Nicole, a.k.a. Caddy, who says, great story from Stan. I said earlier that there were references to Charles boats, and him saying that he lettered in rowing and polo while wearing a shirt with boats on them is one of them. I like that shirt. It should have appeared more often. My ability to recognize actors is strange. When Muldoon appeared, I knew he looked familiar, but I couldn't place him until I saw the name in the end credits and said, oh, that's Ugly John from season one. When I first saw the ring banger, the instant he appeared, I thought, he's very famous, but I couldn't put the name to the face until the credits said Leslie Nielsen. I'm able to do that too. I'm constantly remarking on actors in old movies that I remember from some other movie. It's the most useless skill that I have. It's just worth nothing in the marketplace, but I enjoy it. Deanne Grant says, I can verify everything my brother said. This is true. Even the TVs. He did forget to mention his red Hawkeye robe he wore daily. Thank you so much, Deanne, for commenting on your brother Stan's episode. That's great. I love that stuff. Episode 183, Stars and Stripes with Marie Kay. There she is again. Got comments from Nicole, a.k.a. Caddy, Robert McCarthy, Mike Thomas, George, Tom Terrific, Dave from Newburyport, Major Joe Price, Stan Peel, and Andrea Gall, who says, great episode. Marie is such a pleasure to listen to. I agree, Andrea. I particularly enjoyed her story about drinking from the bottle. It reminded me of my grandmother who always wanted to get pizza delivered after seeing it in an American sitcom. It was quite a rigmarole to do so at the time, but we eventually did it. She wasn't overly impressed by the pizza herself, but was pleased to have been able to do it. My grandmother would have been in her 70s at the time, so it's not just young people who are inspired in such a way. That's fantastic. James K. says, being in academia, deciding who was the first author can be tricky business. Often the lead investigator, usually the professor who has a research group, is listed first, followed by the grad and undergrad students who worked on it. Other times, the professor will put themselves last, highlighting the students who actually did the work. Like Rob mentioned in the episode, some will put all the names alphabetically to keep things even. I'm still in the process of publishing papers, but I intend to put my students first and myself last. While I did do some of the work in the lab, they did the lion's share and should get credit for it. It's a bit different in this situation because BG and Charles are essentially equals, but with a host of other subordinates involved, as Potter rightfully points out. It would be impossible to list everything from all the nurses, corpsmen, and even the participants at Walter Reed. It would be appropriate for BG and Charles to be the only authors. I would go with alphabetical order, but that's hard with just two authors. Once again, I have to wonder. It is a wonder to listen to Marie. I would listen to her read the dictionary. Thank you so much for saying that. And again, I agree. Episode 184. Yes, sir. That's our baby with my guest, Essie. Got comments from Nicole, a.k.a. Caddy, Mike Thomas, Tim Price, Marie Christina, Major Joe Price, Ange, Stan Peel, James K., and Donut Eater 111, who says, I've always loved the MASH episodes focused on kids in the camp like Kim and, of course, the kids. I just really like how it allows them to show a different side to these characters and they look after these precious and often less fortunate kids. Case in point, early Margaret showing her motherly side before she shifted away from her hot lips personality, and Charles here. And the writing tended to be good enough where they could do that without being too schmaltzy. Plus, in each of them, they were able to use the kids' situations to directly deal with harsher realities of war, with this being the most upfront about it. I do get why this may not be for everyone, but for me, it's pretty high on my list. And then Matt B. says, thanks for a wonderful episode breakdown. A couple of additional ideas that came to mind while watching and listening. One, it reminds me of the episode What's Up, Doc?, where Margaret thinks she's pregnant, and Hawkeye's response is that it's great news. Some life and joy to be brought to such a dark place. You see how that manifests in this episode. And I know logistically that they couldn't care for the kid and wounded, but part of me wonders if they could have taken shifts or something some way, but that may have brushed up against Army regulations and setting an unsustainable precedent. Two, it's never explicitly mentioned, maybe even too far for MASH, but given all the context provided, it makes one wonder not only if the mother knew the father's identity, but whether her experience leading up to the child's birth was consensual. That would make it even sadder, but perhaps even more realistic given the conditions and stories of the time. Thank you, Matt. Episode 185, Bottle Fatigue, with my guests Ange and Scott X. Comments from Captain Entropy, Major Joe Price, George, Tim Price, Marie Christina, and Mike Thomas, who says, great discussion. It's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool coincidence that an episode featuring a Cheers cast member has a recurring joke about Boston. Yes, Boston, Massachusetts. I didn't even make that connection, Mike. Thank you. I'm dumb sometimes. Speaking of Cheers, he goes on, I couldn't help but think of Sam Malone in connection with Hawkeye having to leave the gang at the O Club so he wouldn't be tempted to drink. Sam was an alcoholic, and yet he was able to own the bar without being tempted, except a couple times in the early years. But I think Hawkeye was more subject to temptation here because he was in early stages of quitting, albeit temporarily. Yeah, it's an interesting, interesting observation. Would love to see, Hawkeye and Sam Malone talk about drinking. That would be an interesting alternate reality. Stan Peel says, as someone whose family has been impacted time and again by alcoholism, I'm always impressed by the way MASH is able to handle the subject. This episode and Bottoms Up are especially good and ring true to those who know the signs, effects, and results of this tricky disease. It's clear to anyone in this club that Hawkeye is not an alcoholic, but he's wise to find out for himself. His fears of going home and building a still in his living room are not unfounded. Service members coming home with addiction to drugs and alcohol are far too common, as explained by Frank Burns himself in Alcoholics Anonymous. Another such episode, which leaned heavily on humor, but still had moments of genuine insight. It's no small thing that MASH itself has helped me in my own questionable moments. Knowing the difference between wanting and needing is an important weapon in the arsenal, and having Hawkeye's decisive moment in my mental storehouse has been invaluable. On a lighter note, drunk, bigoted Winchester is some of my favorite comedy gold, and I too, being from the upper Midwest, lived in a community of Germans and Poles exclusively, no one as exotic as an Italian that I can recall. So we Polish folks had to endure nothing but Polak jokes from those dirty crowds. Groups, people just love self-selecting and then picking on other groups. It's just a sad, sad part of human nature. Episode 186, Heal Thyself, with my guest Michael Basanga, comments from Tim Price, Movie Mets Royce, Sean M. Myers, Phoebe M., Marie Christina, Tom Musgrave, Mike Thomas, James K., Stan Peel, Ben, and Ange, who says, as always, I would never compare working in the ED to being a combat surgeon, but I can tell you that I know of several docs who couldn't take the stress and strain of ER medicine and left. So I can understand Newsom here. I thought the new configuration of the OR made it feel more like a factory assembly line, adding to the dehumanization and loss of feeling that can happen when someone is faced with never-ending stress. Lastly, I wonder if there's some backstory to Newsom we don't see. I could see a world where after his earlier horrific combat time, he showed signs of cracking. So the Army sent him to Japan for a much more controlled and less stressful medical career. He's too talented to have left medicine completely, so they moved him. And when the 477 the short, they looked around. Who has combat experience? Newsom. So they sent him back, and all that trauma intensified and revealed itself. Great discussion. You get it as an adult, but you can't get kids. It's my lexicon for sure. Thank you, Ange. Lisa GK says, about Hawkeye knowing Charles has never had the mumps, I don't think it's a mistake or that something was cut. I always inferred that it was something Charles had mentioned off screen, perhaps in a conversation with Hawkeye and BJ when the disease began to break out in camp. As such, I really like it because it makes the 477 feel like the 477 is alive and continues to exist after the cameras are turned off. While I like the plot around Steve and Edward Herman is doing a great job, I've always felt he's a bit much, too much of a perfect fit for Hawkeye and BJ and their special brand of humor. He's just a bit too likable, a bit too much one of the guys, a bit too much like a clone of Hawkeye and BJ. That, to me, is more of a plot point than a character, and I wish they'd given Steve his own distinct personality so that it could be both a character and a plot point. That's fair, Lisa. I mean, again, I think I like – I mean, we knew that they were going to get rid of him, so I guess it maybe hurts more that he fits in so well and then has such a breakdown. So maybe that was part of it, but I understand your point. Episode 187, Old Soldiers with Andrea Gall. Got comments from Andrea Gall, Ange, Rob McCarthy, Marie Christina, Bill from Minnesota, James K., Stan Peel, and Dr. Lewis, who says, hats off to Colonel Potter if he can still fit into his World War I uniform while toasting his fallen comrades. That military exercise regime clearly works wonders for the waistline. And then Tom Musgrave, who says, I love your observations about Charles and Margaret, especially the prediction about post-Korea Charles back in Boston and his interaction with a daughter. What you wrote about letting her talk as much as she wants at the table and loving every minute of it really got me to think of what we knew of Charles's upbringing. In your headcanon after MASH Boston, do you think he'd let her call him dad? Do you think he'd insist on it? And Margaret with those kiddos was a joyous sight to see. As I listened to Rob and Andrea, I had my own little post-Korea headcanon about Margaret. She never remarried, never had kids, retired from the Army as a full colonel, and then moved to a town on the East Coast, helping an old family friend who was an Army doctor start a pediatrics clinic. Might have been a nice sitcom to watch. It made me smile anyway. I love how many people do their own MASH fan fiction. There's so many comments here where people are imagining their own MASH stories. There's something about MASH that really inspires people to write their own versions of it. It's completely adorable. Episode 188, Morale Victory with my guest Kellen. Got comments from Clint Robson, Randy DeLong, James K., Brian Chufo, Nicole a.k.a. Caddy, Lisa G.K., Rob McCarthy, Ange, Marie Christina, Tim Price, Stan Peel, Mike Thomas, and Randall, who says Klinger has to go to Seoul, do Potter's errand, find dinner, go to the drugstore, go to the library, and then return. And after all that, he cannot enjoy the beach because he has to be the cook. I think that's called abuse. And speaking of the beach party, wouldn't one Foot Locker filled with sand make for a pretty crummy beach? Yeah. I agree with Winchester. I took piano lessons when I was 10. I'm 73. And I can play notes, but not the music. Jack Benny told a story about violin virtuoso Isaac Stern being asked how he thought Benny played. His answer was, well enough for his purpose. I believe that this describes my piano playing. My purpose is for self-enjoyment and enrichment. Even with all my mistakes, the mistakes I make, my playing is well enough for my purpose. And one final note. This is the first time I really heard how out of tune the Oak Club's piano is. When I first started taking lessons, all my folks could afford was a 60-year-old upright. It cost about $100. When David plays the first note of the composition, the sound took me back to that time, that out of tune upright. That's a great memory, Randall. Thank you so much. I sometimes talk about that. I would love to learn to play the piano when I had free time, but like I'm in my 50s now. I'm like, I don't think at this late stage I would ever be any good. Like even by the lower standards of, you know, good for my purposes, I just think I don't have enough time to ever be any good at it, but who knows. And Movie Metzeroy says, great show, Kellen and Mr. Kelly. Matt, you're so formal. Rob, I'd like to congratulate you for not only standing up for your newest and younger MASH fans, but for welcoming so many to the show. People sometimes forget how important it is for something we love to get new fans. It's what truly keeps our beloved shows and media alive. These fans must be welcomed into the fold. The toxic gatekeepers need to be pushed aside. We must celebrate and share so the community will grow and MASH will remain available to all through physical media and streaming. Matt, 1,000,000% to that. I want MASH to have newer and younger fans. Believe me, this upcoming season, there'll be an example of that. it doesn't make my love of the show any less that there are new people who enjoy it. I want the show. I want any creative thing to keep thriving and not just be a relic. So I will continue to have younger fans onto the show because I love their observations. So thank you so much for pointing it out. I appreciate it. Episode 199, Lend a Hand with my guest, James Cabral. Got comments from Captain Entropy and George, Movie Matt Royce, him again. And Marie Kay, who says, well, Rob and James, you did it. You had a very enjoyable conversation about one of my least favorite episodes. I think this was the most I've ever enjoyed hearing about Lend a Hand. Light, yikes, I really don't care for this one. It's not as high on my dislike as list as Banana Crackers and Nuts or Operation Nose Lift, but it's up there. I just can't get over Dr. Borelli's personality transplant. I don't get why they didn't just name him Dr. John Smith or whatever and have Robert Arnold play an entire different character. I truly like Borelli's first appearance. This war-weary man who has seen too much and handles it in the only way he can is a wonderful character. And the way Hawkeye sees his future in him and isn't happy with what he sees is so good. I am all for characters evolving, changing, going through experiences and makes them come out of the other side, a changed person, for better or worse. But we need to be with them on the journey for it to work. Apparently, Borelli has spent time away developing an unhealthy obsession with Hawkeye, and it's plain uncomfortable to watch. Like, why? Alan Alda wrote so many great episodes for the show and is a tremendous actor, but this is just painful to watch. I can't stand Dr. Left and Dr. Right, and don't even get me started on that little clap they do. It feels like I'm watching a Hallmark movie, and I say that as someone who watches the Christmas ones happily, where the plots are always the same, the snow is made of paper, and no one buttons up their coat. Maybe they've listened to Dr. Borelli. Haha. I just expect more from my beloved MASH. One of the reasons I love the show so much is that usually I feel like the writers treat the audience as smart people, but here I feel like we're being talked down to. And like you talked about, how in the world do they manage to get such serious injuries? Come on. It reminds me of Comrades in Arms, where Hawkeye somehow manages to get that piece of wood jammed in his leg and is being very dramatic about it. Maybe they're just precious porcelain dolls with the Princess and the Pea level sensitivities. Ugh, you two were so much nicer towards this episode than what I am. I hate to be a hater, but MASH can soar so high and fall so low, and this is very low, low for me. To end on a positive note, though, I will say that I don't mind the party plot. It's not spectacular, but I do like when all the characters are doing something together like that. And also, if this episode helped to heal the relationship between father and son, Alda, then that's really great, and I'm happy for them. I also really liked when you talked about comfort shows. I love that MASH is that for so many people. For me, it has a lot to do with the connection between the actors. There's something so unique in the way they look at each other, and you can feel a connection between them that goes way beyond the characters they're playing. The closeness between them off screen is so evident, and it's so restful just to lean back and experience it. Thank you both again. I had a great time listening to this. I love angry Marie. you're such a fountain of light all the time, Marie. So when you're negative, it's always just very, very charming to me. So thank you for listening to an episode of the show on an episode of the series you don't like that much. Phoebe M says, appreciated the shout out for our period of adjustment episode. I forget sometimes that BJ getting worse/more evil/harder to tolerate isn't a draw for everybody. So thank you for the reality check. I remember really liking Lend a Hand, but I think there's something about the meta narrative of being an Alda family drama that really appeals to me. I love that sort of thing. Actors getting their characters all intertwined with their real lives, adding all this interesting behind the scenes context. That's exactly why I started watching ER in the first place, so I could see Alan Alda playing another TV doctor who also got army training, funnily enough, and just smiled on myself because I know. Speaking of, in Alan Alda's book, Never Have Your Dog Stuffed, second time that's been mentioned, he mentions how he wrote this episode as a sort of self-reflection exercise after he found himself being controlling over his dad when they were filming Bottle Fatigue. I think you mean the other one. Quote, I was directing him. I was still doing it. I wouldn't let up on him. I couldn't figure out why. I had this rivalry with him in many ways. I was still an adolescent boy with a father I needed to best. I wrote a show for him in which his character Borelli is so controlling that it drives Hawkeye crazy. It gave us a chance to play out the tensions between us as other people. He also said his father loved it, and it was his idea to have them both get injured. It had to be each other's hands. Another quote, like the two characters, we were working hand in hand, and it had taken a few wounds to get us there. It was as though the scene were a wish on his part and a gentle nudge to us both, delivered to the medium of play. How could a person read that and not love this episode, Marie? TV shows are at their best when their writer-director are using it as therapy. He also mentions in that book that how his father had wanted to be a doctor when he was younger. I'm connecting the dots. I'm connecting them. Don't even get me started on Mike Farrell's book. Great episode as usual. Thank you, Phoebe. Episode 190, Goodbye Cruel World, with my guest MJ. Got comments from Lisa Pomegranate, Randall, Danny Ulrich, Movie Matt Royce, Marie Kay, Major Joe Price, George, and Stan Peel, who says, I really appreciated MJ's breakdown of the wars in Asia leading up to the Korean War. So much more complex than I thought. And imagine learning that the Japanese internment camps, while simultaneously learning that there were Japanese American and Asian American soldiers in World War II. Such a complicated position. In fact, I've often wondered why Tokyo was such a friendly place for Americans in 1950, when we had just bombed Hiroshima and Nagasaki 5 years earlier. I have never followed sports, and I remember thinking, if I were in Yu's position, I could not save my own life with baseball facts. I'd have a fighting chance if it were MASH trivia. Yeah, same, Steele. Lisa GK says another thing. Sydney used hypnotism in the billfold syndrome, so it wasn't the first time he's ever done it. I just goofed. Thank you for pointing that out, Lisa. I just completely goofed. When I was back listening back to the episode, I thought, well, I don't say that he's – I was just wondering that it was used so quickly. And then I straight up said, it was the first time he's ever done it, which is just completely wrong. In fact, just one season earlier. So my brain just did not work in that moment. Mike Thomas says, great discussion, and MJ was a terrific guest. I too found everyone laughing at Klinger's possessions offensive from a modern perspective. I'm glad at least Potter and BJ partially rectified how they acted. Jamie Potter's impression of Harry Morgan is so funny. Like you said, it doesn't sound exactly like him, but captures the essence of him in an exaggerated way. I keep thinking it would have been hilarious if there had been a Saturday morning cartoon version of MASH like they did with other sitcoms of that era, such as Happy Days, and Jamie Farr could have done the voice of Sherman T. Potter. That is funny about the MASH timeline in terms of references to who is president and vice president. It was in the season 4 episode Dear Peggy that Hawkeye mentioned Richard Nixon being the vice president, and Nixon was VP under Eisenhower, but he did hear season 8 Truman is still president. I totally agree that I wish we could get more of Sidney Freeman than once a season. Yeah, they should have done like 2 Sidneys an episode. By the way, Mike, regarding a animated MASH TV show, there was no such thing, of course, but in the late 70s, there was an animated show called Mush with the little asterisks that was about a bunch of dogs, like St. Bernards that like rescued people from the snow, and they were based on MASH characters. I am not making that up. I think it was part of like an omnibus show that aired with different cartoons under the umbrella of one show. So they only did, I think, a handful of MASH shows, but go to YouTube and you can find it. And there's like the characters' names are like riffs on MASH characters. It's like Henry Bark or something like that. It's crazy. I never knew it existed. I never saw it until many years later, but it is out there. So go to YouTube and find MASH and report back. Episode 191, Dreams, with my guest, Professor Maddie Williams. Got comments from Mike Thomas, George, Nicole, a.k.a. Caddy, James K., Ange, Brett Young, Marie K., Stan Peel, Randall, Tim Price, Captain Entropy, and Dr. Chris Lewis, who says, what a great discussion. Welcome, Maddie. Such an insightful commentary into this most symbolic of episodes. I wonder if there's ever been an official version of why each dream was selected and what each was meant to signify to the dreamer. Dreams are so weird and still poorly understood. My favorite book on the subject, if anyone's interested, is Matthew Walker's Why We Sleep. One of the theories to explain why we dream is that it's one way for our brains to simulate potentially threatening situations in order to formulate possible survival strategies. That would be highly relevant for stressed out medical stiff stuck in the middle of a foreign war. Quite how that relates to a sparkle waving Winchester or a limbless Hawkeye, I really don't know. P.S. Meeting Dr. Ange in person was a true pleasure. And you're also welcome to visit anytime, Rob. We ate dinner in the Hot Fuzz pub one night. I can confirm no underage drinking took place while we were visiting. So jealous. Someday, Dr. Chris, someday, I promise my wife and I will make our way over to your neck of the woods. BBM says, many, many exclamation marks. I've been a fan of Maddie's for ages on MASH Player. I always found her insight and commentary about the show and everything else she posts about to be fascinating and thought-provoking. So I knew this episode was going to be a good one. Loved hearing y'all break down each dream one by one and pour over the details, especially in terms of the actual physical details that were lost on the audience in original low-def broadcast, but were nevertheless purposely added in by the cast and crew for a reason, the Bible page. Wow. BJ's dream always stands out to me the most, of course. Peg's dark green dress with mesh overtaking her arms and neck like the army itself is reaching into and covering BJ's memories of her. The little pig bow tie. The staircase she descends just like the one in their actual house that we see her walk down next season and Oh How We Danced. White suits and white scrubs. The enormous flower she's wearing that looks like one of those stick-on gift bows, etc. So forth, so on. Rob saying his one criticism would be how similar everyone's dreams are structurally made me think of the dream sequences on The Sopranos, apparently inspired by Twin Peaks and other David Lynch works, which always had a lot of variety but still managing to feel like dreams. I agree, everyone's dreams in this episode that have have that same sort of slow pace, and while the details would differ between them, the same kind of setup and punchline. The thing I'd say in defense of all that is, well, everyone's been living the same lives for each other for years now. Same few rooms, same color, same routine over and over and over. Even the blood and misery and horror is part of their daily routine. What else is there to dream about? Their brains have been tattooed by this ugliness in the same ink by the same hand. Great turn of phrase, baby. Love the discussion. One of my new favorites, especially the bit at the end about the crossover between war and horror as genres. How interesting. Thank you very much. And Donator 111 says, as you were saying, this one is actually very mixed in its reception to the point where it's right up there with the, or you're even surpassing, Hawkeye is one of the most divisive episodes of the series. And part of me gets it. On one hand, you have those who prefer MASH as a comedy, and while there are some humorous moments in between the dreams, this one goes pretty far in the drama side of things. And even with those who like both and appreciate what they were trying to do, there's an uncomfortable air about this episode where it might be a bit too disturbing for some viewers, basically being too successful at what it was trying to do. That being said, I adore this episode. When I ranked the episodes after my most recent full series rewatch, this one ended up at number 5, after Welcome to Korea, Quo Vadis Captain Chandler, the late Captain Pierce, and A War for All Seasons. As you can probably tell by that selection, I'm a sucker for episodes that push the show's creative storytelling and have a smart mix of comedy and drama, and really explore the characters in interesting ways. So while it doesn't have as much humor as some others, it's no wonder that I love this one so much. The visual storytelling with this one does a great job capturing these characters' psyches in the beautiful, surreal vignettes. Great job to the writers, and especially Alan Alda for his directing here. Episode 192, War co-responded with my guest Shannon Muth. Got comments from Mike Thomas, George, Tim Price, Marie K, Nicole, a.k.a. Caddy, Phoebe M, and Randall, who says, now we're talking. In season 8, this is about the only good episode after Levine left. Old Soldiers is also good. And how can you not love Susan St. James? She and Jane Curtin were the reasons I watched Kate and Allie, even though the scripts were weak. It was interesting to hear the interpretation of Aggie saying, makes me love you all the more. I never saw the negative connotation that you and your guests saw. It was obvious that Aggie loved BJ. Have you ever heard of love at first sight? And during her stay, she saw the care that BJ took in both his work and his personal relationships. Also, I see nothing wrong with one person telling another that they love him. It's a great thing to hear. I'm no Romeo, far from it, but I have had several women tell me that, even though I did not have reciprocal feelings. And I have spoke it a couple of times, too, without it being said back. In this case, they both feel it, even though it's been a short time. Remember, PJ says, I can't go to I love you because of the damn war. And it also tells her that the love is mutual. But PJ's strong morality overshadows this feeling of love. Dr. Ann says, great discussion. Even I, at a young age, was rather charmed by Susan St. James and Aggie as Aggie in this episode, so it's easy to see how BJ would be intrigued / attracted. What I don't get is Aggie's immediate attraction to BJ. It doesn't seem to be what he is that attracts her. It's what he isn't. He isn't always hitting on her, a big city guy, a blowhard. That makes me love you more is, again, from a negation. I really don't like in love after 24 hours. I can see myself falling in love with you a bit easier if there's a big early attraction. Lastly, I always thought that Margaret does indeed know about BJ's prior dalliance and how it impacted him. So her saying BJ never was a way of trying to dissuade Aggie from hitting on BJ, fearing he might succumb again and how devastating that would be for him. Great episode discussion. That's a great idea, Ange. I hadn't really thought of that. There's nothing in the text that suggests that, but that doesn't matter. I like that observation. It's great. The idea that Margaret did hear about it and she's doing it to throw Aggie off the scent. That's great. I really like that. So, okay. One last thing about this episode. For those of you who listen, you remember that Shannon made the observation that she thought in the scene where Hawkeye and BJ are operating and they're having the conversation about Aggie, that how the lights are off, and about how the way the two actors are bending into the frame and the way the whole shot is framed makes it look like a heart. And Shannon was wondering if that was just reading too far into it, and it was just, you know, an insane, way too deep, or through the looking glass here, people kind of thing. And she wondered if that was perhaps intentional, if, you know, maybe she wasn't crazy and it was perhaps intentional. So I couldn't let that pass. So I reached out to our man on the inside for one last time for this season, our beloved Mike Farrell. And here's what I wrote. I said, hi, Mike. I'm here to pester you one last time for this season of the podcast. My guest for this episode, War Correspondent, which we both loved, had this idea that she was obsessed with, namely the shot of BJ and Hawkeye performing surgery while talking about Aggie O'Shea with all the lights off around them. She thought that the shape looked like a heart, and as director, that was your idea and intention. Any chance there's any truth to her flight of fancy? Was this framing intentional? Thank you again. And I sent him a screenshot of the episode. So then Mike wrote back, never a problem, Rob. I love the shot. While I can't remember the conversation around the camera while setting it up, my inclination is to give credit for the idea to Dominic Palmer, our genius director of photography. Please tell your guest she has sharp eyes and a good intuition. Isn't that amazing? So I wrote back one more time and I said, ha, thanks for the confirmation, Mike. She is going to be thrilled when she finds out she was right. By the way, her handle on MASH Tumblr is Captain Honeycutt. And then Mike responded one more time, thanks, Rob. Please tell her I'm touched and flattered by that. So there you go, everybody. Shannon's flight of fancy was, in fact, not a flight of fancy. It was, as far as the director of the episode, BJ Honeycutt himself, was intentional, but the work of the DP, Dominic Palmer. So there you go, Shannon. You got the official confirmation from BJ himself. Hey, we love this guy so much. episode 193, Back Pay, with my guest Billy Shulman. Got comments from Chris Lewis, Ange, Mike Thomas, and Tim Price, who says, it took me way too long to realize that the title Back Pay applied to both parts. Ugh. I've always had back trouble, so I've seen chiropractors in my 20s when it came to a head sitting at a computer all day, but I'm not sure if Father Mulcahy's approach is legit. I've even tried acupuncture, but it always seems to involve the needles in my toes, and it says of sensitivity, so it's not for me. I'd be fine any place besides my extremities. With that, this is a story that works best for Charles and was hilarious. His moment about anatomy was great. As we've seen, he has quite the poetic soul multiple times for art and music, and it makes him a well-rounded character. Hawkeye is such a great doctor voice. He goes from being concerned by Snyder to, let me take a look at it, after injuring his foot seamlessly. It just jumped out of me this episode. Thank you, Tim. Yeah, as I get older, I've had some back problems too. And there's nothing makes you feel older than having back problems, having to lay down because you get a bad back. It just really gets to you when you get to a certain age. You're like, oh my God, I'm a million years old. And then George, you said, I saw a picture once of Mamie Eisenhower in her living room, and it was very ugly decor. Must be an army wife thing. And then Marie Christina says, there was a lot of fun. Loved hearing from Billy. For some reason, I had mixed up Back Pay with That Darn Kid. So a good 10 minutes into the episode, I was still like, they sure take their sweet time to introduce the goat. But alas, there was no goat. It had obviously been a very long time since I watched the episode, and I really enjoyed it. I think there's something about that they both feature giant bags sitting in Klinger's office, right? Because there's the giant bag of x-rays and That Darn Kid is the giant bag of money. This is the same visual there. Anyway, Marie continues. Love the little Margaret and Potter interaction with the swatches. She's being very tactful. Those are some ugly prints. It's always nice to get to know a little something about the characters we only hear about. And here we learn that Mildred Potter has horrible taste in fabric. BJ's relationship to Margaret is so interesting to me. We see them be friendly, absolutely, but the joke about the quartet has just a tone to it that is so casually insulting. If he had said something like it to Hawkeye, yes, absolutely, they are super close. They have their own jargon, but BJ just doesn't have that with Margaret. There are several aspects of their relationship through the seasons that intrigue me. He is okay with joking like this or with Hawkeye and him offering to step into the shower with her. He giggles happily outside her tent as a dummy with the weight of a grown man falls upon her. Had some guy talked to Peg like that or played a prank on her, there would have been murder on BJ's mind. But he can also be protective of Margaret, like when Tom is about to walk off with her. I really wish we could have gotten some storylines where BJ and Margaret's dynamics was explored more. Also, the way BJ is just casually a jerk in this episode, pouring salt into the sugar. Why, dude? Just to ruin someone's coffee break? So interesting, and it makes me think about Peg and what kind of person she is. She must be a practical jokester, too, to be able to stand BJ. Doesn't she send him a really horrible cake in one episode? Maybe that was a joke, too. Maybe she really could bake, and she decided to keep her husband's spirit up with a little prank. See, again, more fan fiction. I really like the scene where Charles is being tortured by everyone's concern. Frustrated Charles is always fun to watch. Very true to character for him, too, that he is rude to the Korean doctors right up until he discovers that they can do something for him. He does apologize quickly, though, so at least that's something. Oh, and also, I have a problem with feet, so that sudden close-up of Snyder's naked foot worked as a jump scare for me. No fun times, but this discussion was, so thank you both. Thank you, Marie. And then finally, episode 194, April Fool's, with my guest Vanya Oh. Got comments from Marie K. and Mike Thomas, plus Paul Wildeberger, who says, years back, I mentioned in the comments in this episode that my favorite joke from the entire series is the best written joke? No. Is it the funniest joke? Alas, no. Was it at least the best delivery joke? Definitely no. But it was still how it was delivered that makes me love it so much. Margaret, upon discovering her tent was missing, is yelling at the guys and asking, where is my tent? When she asks BJ, he says, we gave it to a dog. Now it's a pup tent. Was it a silly throwaway line? Sure. Mike Farrell, though, as always, presents those types of one-liners like no one else. Nowadays, we tend to call jokes like that dad jokes. And she's listening. Being a dad, I take pride in my ability to make those types of jokes, but I was making them long before I had children. Back then, they were just groaners. Mike Farrell as BJ had a big effect on my sense of humor. All of those funny interjections he would make over the years were some of my favorite bits and inspired me to react to funny things I hear like the way he did. As for the other manifestations of BJ's humor, i.e. pranks, include me in the list of people who don't care for them. I may laugh at some of the pranks played on MASH or other shows, but in real life, not so much. Yeah, right with you there, Paul. And then Victoria Marino says, what a wonderful season this has been. Great episode, Rob and Vanya. I especially enjoyed the discussion about DOS. May be able to answer a question posed about this episode. Rob, you were wondering where Klinger kept all his dresses that he had. Now that he is company clerk and lives in the main office, which of course wouldn't be appropriate for showcasing his outfits for his previous career of Section 8 hijinks. Well, I just watched Stars and Stripes episode and I noticed the Klinger collection seems to be taking up residency in the supply tent. At least that's where all the dresses were, dutifully hanging up on that mobile dress rack when Klinger was pinning Margaret into that pink outfit for Scully. Perhaps the supply tent, auxiliary supplies tent, is the answer. I don't think I noticed that. Victoria, thank you so much for that observation. Yes, I mean, obviously he's got them somewhere. He didn't throw them out, but I can't believe I've never noticed that after all the decades of watching the show. So those are, wow, that was long. Those are the comments. I'm sorry I can't read more, but we're trying to keep this episode down to less than 3 hours. I have to record this feedback show kind of like the week after the last episode drops. So more comments will be rolling in on MASHcast. And so if I didn't acknowledge you, I apologize, but I just have a deadline of when I have to get this recorded by. And like I said, MASH comments tend to keep coming in. So thank you all for the comments. And I really do appreciate all the feedback of this stuff. It's just terrific. Before we get to episode rankings, I just want to highlight some of the people nice enough to leave 5-star reviews for the show over on Apple Podcasts. I just went through a couple of those that have come in the, just basically since last season. One is from Boston Fan, BAWSTON. It says, the GOAT, 5 stars. Love the diversity of perspective that Rob invites on. This show meant something significant to so many people in so many different ways. Love hearing about different people's connection to it and what resonates. Thank you so much, Boston Fan. Fred Sanford, 1971. I'm coming, Elizabeth. 5 stars. It just says, keep the politics in. We got YZ left five stars. So far, so good. I've listened to the first 3 seasons. Rob clearly loves the show. As a former military man, I wish he knew more, but he admits his shortcomings, and I appreciate that. I also appreciate that he keeps the fire and water stuff brief, and even though many guests are part of the network, they don't overdo it. I'm not really sure what that means. I hate podcasts that just BS and takes forever to get to the meat and potatoes. This isn't the case here. Sometimes there are political hints thrown in, but it's small and so far hasn't dwelled on politics. They dive deep into the characters as if they are real, and I really enjoy that. I watch a few episodes, download a few podcasts, and listen while walking or driving. My only complaint is that Rob should be done by now. I just started listening this year, and it's been going for almost 10 years. Get it over with, for crying out loud. Great job so far. Maybe I can co-host one day. Sorry, YZ. Life gets in the way, man. I'm doing the best I can. And then finally, one last 5-star review from O Snapple Iced Tea, 5 stars. It just says, politics. I have never reviewed anything, but reading through these reviews, I feel the need to discuss the debate whether politics should be brought onto the show or help out. The show of MASH is inherently political, and therefore shouldn't any podcast discussing it echo that reality? The messages that MASH portrays is exactly what these people in the podcast portray, and which I respect. If you don't like politics and entertainment, then why do you love MASH so much that you are listening to a podcast that literally dissects each episode? Thanks, Rob, and guests for staying true to the show. Thank you, Snapple Ice Tea. I appreciate you saying that, and I appreciate the observations. Look, I try not to jam things in there when inappropriate, but you know, the show is mine. It's coming from my perspective, and there's things in my life that pop up that I think of in the moment. Once in a while, I'll say something that I take out, but for the most part, we leave the conversations as they happen. And, you know, if you want to listen to bloodless recitations of the plot, you can run these episodes through an AI filter. Don't do that, but you could, and just have some computer voice tell you what happened in them or whatever. But you're listening to this to get real people's real life reactions to what they're seeing. And sometimes that makes me think of things that are happening in the current day. And if that's bothersome to you, then I can only say, don't listen, because it's not going to stop, because it happens in the moment. I try and keep these conversations to be lively and real and in the moment. And sometimes you say stuff that maybe you wouldn't say if you had time to think about it, but we don't do it that way. So that's what the show is. And it's going to stay that way up until the end. And now we're, you know, we're down to the last three seasons anyway. So again, thank you all for those Apple podcast reviews. I really appreciate it. And if you want to leave more, I would love to read them and I'll read them on the air. All right. So season eight rankings, this is where I just sort of, for my personal favorites, rate the episodes from my least favorite to the most favorite. I mean, look, you know, even my least favorite one is still pretty good. You know, as I've said, you know, even like the worst MASH is better than most other TV shows. So this is a gradated scale. And maybe when we get to the end of the show, after season 11, I'll rank all 251, although that's a huge effort. But anyway, take these for what they will. These are my episode rankings from season 8, starting from my least favorite to the most favorite. Lend a Hand, Old Soldiers, Nurse Doctor, Yes Sir, That's Our Baby, April Fools, The Yellow Brick Road, Dear Uncle Abdul, Captain's Outrageous, Too Many Cooks, Bottle Fatigue, Gorilla My Dreams, Back Pay, Goodbye Cruel World, Mr. and Mrs. Who, Stars and Stripes, War Correspondent, Are You Now Margaret, Goodbye Radar Part 1, Morale Victory, Private Finance, Heal Thyself, Goodbye Radar Part 2, Dreams, Lifetime, and Period of Adjustment. So your episode rankings may vary. All right, we're wrapping up here. Season 9, everybody. There are less episodes of MASH in every season going forward after this. Season 8 was their longest season at 25 episodes. There were only 20 episodes in season 9. And a couple of the podcasts are already booked because there were some guests who didn't make it onto season 8 that I want to make sure they got back in season 9. So there's a couple that are already earmarked. So there are less slots than usual. But if you are interested in being on MASH Cast season 9, email fwpodcasts@gmail.com. In the subject line, please put MASHcast Season 9 and list your top three episodes that you would like to appear on. That helps me try and get someone at least something close to a favorite that they might want to talk about. If you have never been on the show before, I would appreciate it if you could let me know what time zone you're in, because that does help me. I'm in EST time zone, and it helps me figure out scheduling-wise, because some people, they're really far away. We have to make it on a weekend, or we have to make it just, you know, there's some logistics there. So if you have never done the show before, let me know your time zone and that would help out. The deadline to get these requests in is September 1st. I know I say every season, I'm really going to get to the next season quickly, and then I don't, but I'm really, really going to try this time to get on season 9 as soon as possible. So the deadline is September 1st. And my goal is to basically start sending out assignments like a day or two later. So the deadline is really hard here. September 1st, they all have to be in by, and then I will start sending out the emails about picking who gets what, and we'll start recording from there. So that is season 9, everybody. Like I said, so if you want to be on, email fwpodcasts@gmail.com, subject matter, subject line, MASHcast season 9, and then put in your top three episodes. I would really appreciate it. And thank you all for the interest. I'm really sorry that so many people don't get to be on, because there's just more requests than there are episodes. And I do try and double up some people. Some people have been very kind to say, I'll double up with someone else to make more room. But we've only got 20 shows this season. And there's only going to be, I think, 20 in season 10. And then there's only like 15 in season 11. So we're the slots are reducing as we go through the season. So again, deadline is September 1st for season 9. And then finally, one last salute to all my Patreons over on patreon.com/FW podcast. These people support the show and I really, really do appreciate it. So big salute to Adam Ackerman, Dennis Bailey, Darrell Clark, James K, Michael Kelly, David Mann, Matt McLean, Lisa P, Brady Palmer, Joe Perino, Stan Peel, Michael Porter, Nicholas Palm, Rob Riley, Adam Sanders, Stefan Van Schaik, Britt Schramm, Billy Schulman, and Mike Thomas. I really, really appreciate the support. So that is going to do it, everybody. I really love doing the show. I love the feedback. And part of the thing that keeps me going for all the effort to get these done is getting to have all these amazing conversations with people and getting to read the feedback and all the stuff, getting to relive these shows and just getting to meet virtually a bunch of people that I would normally get to meet. So this has just been an amazing season with amazing guests. And I'm looking forward to what we're going to do in season 9. So again, thank you all for listening. Thank you for commenting. Thank you for supporting the show. I don't have, obviously, we don't have the announcement of when season 9 will start, but it will be as soon as possible, I promise. Enjoy your fall, everybody. We'll be back soon. But until then, that is all.
MASH will continue.